Are you a small business owner looking to scale your business and your profits? Are you looking for strategies to find balance in your life as an entrepreneur? Stay tuned while Craig Staley, founder of HG Site Design, a website design and marketing agency, shares strategies from successful small business owners, authors, and experts on how to do just that. Let's join Craig as he explores how we can all take our businesses to the next level on the Small Business School podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Small Business School podcast. My guest today is a poetry graduate student turned waiter, turned fax machine operator, turned press release business owner. It's kind of an interesting path that he took. He has a lot of great value for us today about how to write a press release, when a press release might be right for your business, and a lot more. So a lot of great information on the show. And he tells a story about how he saved someone's life with a press release to top it all off. But all of that and a lot more today with our guest, Mickey Kennedy. All right. I'd like to welcome my next guest. He is Mickey Kennedy, founder and president of eReleases. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm doing great. How are you, Craig?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show. Can you give us a little bit about your personal background before we get started?
Sure. I started around 24, 25 years ago in grad school and transitioned to waiting tables, which I assumed I would be doing for the rest of my life because I was in grad school to be a poet. I was doing an MFA in creative writing with an emphasis in poetry. I realized very quickly standing on my feet 8 to 12 hours a day is not for me. So I took an office job. It was with a guy who was building a startup in the telecom field, and he liked the idea I was a poet, and he was looking for someone who could write as well as juggle a lot of different things. And one of those things was handling our PR. And so my task was to take this state-of-the-art fax machine that could hold 100 numbers and put 100 numbers into it, hit send, wait all day for that to finish, and then delete those numbers and put 80 to 90 more in because our journalist contacts was 180, 190. I lobbied to try to get a second fax machine so I wouldn't have to delete the numbers and re-enter them, but they were just so expensive at the time. And what I found was after we would hit send, journalists would occasionally call and say, hey, there's a lot of numbers and tables in the here. Could you just email us that as a Word doc? Mention that to my boss. And he said, wow, someone should start a business where they just email press releases. And I said, maybe I should. He says, yeah, you could do that. And so I spent the next year talking and contacting journalists and asking them if I could send press releases via email. And 23, 24 years ago, I think 99% said yes, send along.
That's awesome.
And so I started about a year after that with almost 23 years ago with a database of about 10,000 journalists. It's certainly grown over the years. And in addition to that, PR Newswire reached out to me and said, hey, you should also send your clients press releases over a newswire. And I pointed out that my clients are paying a couple hundred dollars. They charge $1,000 and up to move a press release nationally. And so we went back and forth and they saw that my customers are not their customers. All of their customers are salesperson driven. They do 30 or 40 releases a year and they have big budgets. My customers are doing 2 or 3 releases a year. Their budgets are very small. And we saw that they had an editorial staff overnight that wasn't very busy, but they had to be there in case someone had a recall or they needed to get some news out to Asia. And so they were there with empty hours. And so I said, what if I scheduled our releases by default for next business day? And that way you could set them up overnight without costing you additional labor. So we were very creative. We got in there, we made it work for both of us. And, you know, we still are sending out releases with our partnership with PR Newswire, as well as the ones that go out through email to subscribing journalists.
Wow, what a great story. How did you, when you started out, how did you get that list of 10,000 journalists so quickly?
Well, at the time, there was directories of newspapers, and I would just go click on the link to the newspapers, and a lot of them would just have the email address under the byline for each article. So I would write to them and say, hey, I'm starting a press release service. I will be sending targeted press releases. And, you know, I see that you appear to cover this beat. Could I send you releases on that subject? And they would either clarify that that's not exactly their beat or what they really wanted. And I would just put it in the database and say, we'll see if I get releases on those subjects. There are some people I'm sure that I never sent anything to because I was willing to create as many categories as journalists wanted. And so I remember biometrics was a field that there was like 13 people wanted just only biometrics press releases. And I had one client in the biometrics field and it worked really well. But when he left, there's nobody really filling that need that's going out to them.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think most of us have heard of a press release and, you know, not all small businesses have probably ever done a press release, but can you explain a little bit of how press releases work exactly and why they're important?
Right. So a press release is actually an announcement about you, your company, something that you're wanting to announce. It's usually written in a third person. If you may have quotes in there where you speak in the first person, and it's very dry. It's very simple. What you're hoping is the journalist will turn it into an article. You're not writing the article for them. You're giving them the groundwork of here's the newsworthy thing that we're doing. This is why we're doing it. The who, what, when, where, how, and why. And we hope that you turn it into something. It's a way that a lot of journalists who are just trolling for content will go to the newswires, look at the industry feed that's specific to them. If they have a login, which many of them do, there's the ability for them to target even within the industry feed, like by including certain keywords, excluding certain keywords, so that they're seeing stuff that's a little more relevant for them. And hopefully something inspires them to click on the headline, to view the whole press release, and potentially write a story about you.
So with your business, with e-releases, do you guys write the press release as well as distribute it, or are you in the business of just distributing it?
We offer writing services, but that being said, when anyone looks at a press release, they feel like, I could write that. And I'll be honest with you, most people can write it. So while we offer writing services, I'd say 95% of our clients tend to write their own. And there's nothing wrong with that because they are very simplistic. The place that you should spend a little more attention to is not the writing of the release, but what it is you're announcing. So many press releases are not strategic. And that's where you get into situations where people send a couple of releases and just feel that PR or press releases don't work for them because nothing happened.
Is there a rule of thumb? And it probably depends on the subject matter, but is there a rule of thumb for like you send it out to 100 different journalists, 1,000 different journalists, whatever it is, what's kind of the quote unquote conversion rate of how many people might use the story? Is there any kind of rule of thumb for that?
There really isn't. I will say that a successful press release, a very successful one, is usually between 8 and 15 articles that are written about them. It's not unusual for someone to do a release and get 1 to 3 articles written about them. And they still consider that, you know, a huge win, depending on where it got published. That being said, I would say more than 80% of the press releases that we issue, nothing happens. There's some syndication of the release that appears on different websites, but that's not really that special. But no articles get written about them. And that's the real problem that happens with press releases, because a lot of people are doing very safe press releases. Every day, I get probably 5 or 6 releases that are about a new VP of HR or something like that. And your likelihood of getting any media attention with a certain personnel change is very low, unless that person is like a real rock star in the industry and you were able to grab them and steal them away. And, you know, that's a real coup for you. But for most people, it's not. And I think that what happens is these releases come out of a mentality of being sort of written or voted on by committee, and they just are very safe. They don't rock the boat. And as a result, the journalist who acts as a gatekeeper sees nothing of value there to share with his audience. Now, if you can just reverse engineer by saying, how can I create some content that's about me that would really excite the audience? The journalist is going to let you write on through and develop an article about you. And that happens all the time. It happens with small businesses, especially because journalists like hidden discoveries. They like to be the one who brings to light this tiny little company you've never heard of and what they do and why it's so unique. Small companies benefit from PR so well because being small, they tend to have an advantage over a large company where journalists feel like, they can afford to advertise. Why would I give them, a free promotion? So if you can sort of create something that's newsworthy and speaks to that audience, you have a very strong likelihood that some journalists are going to cover it.
So if you're doing something unique within your industry or something that's never been done before, even maybe if it's not a great idea, it might be worth a press release. And that's kind of what I'm hearing you should really focus on is something unique that maybe the general public's never heard of.
Right. I mean, if you take, for example, startups, they do really well. About a third of the people that appear on Shark Tank use us. The producers recommend us and say, before your episode airs, you should do a press release. And, a lot of people have had good experiences with e-releases. And so I think that startups do so well because one of the things that they have to do is what we want funding, so we need to be different than everybody else in the marketplace. And so we have to be unique. And for that reason, they have a very strong idea of what it is that makes them different from everybody else. And they can keep that messaging on brand and get that out there. And I think that's why startups have a much higher threshold of getting media success. They tend to get picked up. Now, does it mean that you're going to be a huge success? But it does mean that you have the ability to take advantage of PR and get a lot of people to read you, link to you, and potentially buy from you because of these articles.
Not to put you on the spot here, but can you think of a particular press release? And I'm sure you have thousands in your mind right now, but can you think of a particular press release that just was really successful, either by the volume of articles written or the publications, whether that's the New York Times or this or that? Anything come to mind?
Yes. Last year during the pandemic, I did a free press release for a PR firm client of mine that was doing something called the Dining Bond Initiative. And it was just a short-lived initiative where they wanted to get the word out. And it basically allowed local people to help their favorite restaurant. They would ask them to participate. If they accepted it, they would buy basically a gift certificate at 50% value. The restaurant would immediately get the money and you would have a gift certificate when they reopened, and it would give them money to help them through a difficult time. A lot of them being closed down, not having access to funds. It was one press release. We sent it out. It got over 150 articles, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, all the food magazines and trade publications picked up on it. And we just quit counting at 150. I'm sure it was more. It got some international acclaim. They actually started rolling out international restaurants into it. There was Italy and France and other things. It was a huge success and generated millions of dollars in revenue, again, with just a simple free press release that we sent out. Now that is, it completely exemplifies the leverage of PR, where with a little bit of effort and the right message, you can really go out to a huge number of people. That is not normal. I think it was a perfect storm because there was so much negative news. Here was something very positive, and it empowered people to be able to help. And I think that at the end of the day, we are all humans and we all want to relate to people. And we were all lost and hurt and confused and scared. And we felt powerless. And here was something where we could wield a little bit of power and actually help someone local that, we might be worried about, like, hey, I would really hate it if that little Italian bistro down the road, which is not part of a chain, just vanished or disappeared. So, I'm going to take a chance here to buy a gift certificate and hope that they eventually reopen and that this money really helps them and, perhaps helps their staff as well.
Yeah, you're right. What a perfect storm. Because you think back a year ago and everybody had problems and no one really had solutions. People were opening outdoor dining, but then sometimes they would close the outdoor dining, and it just seemed like, to your point, negative news every way you turned. And here's a way people could help and, hopefully keep their favorite business afloat.
And I think the media is aware that so many people sort of point at them and say, there's so much negative news coming out of the media. And so they're always trying to look for ways to balance it. So if it's a happy-go-lucky time with the media, you may want to skew a little bit more negative to sort of go out after that. But I think that with the year that we've had, positive news really wins out, definitely.
Yeah. So what are, and maybe you covered it a little bit, but what are some reasons why you see press releases fail?
I think the lack of strategy. In the example of the dining bond initiative, you know, there was a clear strategy. We have a solution. We're here to help. We're all about positivity and trying to be creative. And while we have a list of restaurants, feel free to invite your local restaurant to participate. So it was just very open, organic, and positive. I think that a lot of times, a lot of people aren't strategic with the release that they're doing. I've seen press release about a company that spent a lot of money becoming mobile responsive. While that's probably a good use of your funds, it's not like the media is going to reward you with a story about that. You know, it's kind of an assumption this day and age that your website functions on a mobile platform and functions well. It's just expected. So those type of things really don't do very well. However, I tell people often who feel that they're not newsworthy and there's nothing special about them, that doesn't stop you from getting access to the media. I've had really good success getting no-name businesses to get a lot of media attention using surveys and studies. You know, just because you are a local auto repair shop in Pennsylvania, which this is a real example, doesn't mean that you can't do a survey, get it out there in your industry, and then get articles written about you that, you know, profile the survey and the study results. In this case, they were like, well, we wouldn't know who to send it to. And I said, well, you want to send your survey to other auto repair shops? They said, I only know of two in town and we're not really in the best of speaking terms. And so I told them to just partner with a local trade association or an independent trade association. And for them, it was a small trade association. I always recommend the small ones because the large ones, they get all the love in the industry. They get all the news they want, but the small ones never get any attention. So if you approach them and say, I'm doing a survey, would you be willing to email the link to your members? And I would mention you in the survey that I'll be issuing over a newswire. They're like, wow, we could get a little bit of exposure from this. And I've had some clients who co-brand it so that the survey becomes this auto repair shop and the trade association. And it really comes down to coming up with really great questions. A lot of people right now could do really well with questions about how your industry is coping post-pandemic. Is spending for marketing slated to increase, stay the same? You know, there's a lot of people that want to know, take a pulse of what's going on in their industry right now and whether people are really apprehensive about the Delta variant and this, that, and the other as to what's going to happen. And so if you can forecast a little bit by getting some numbers and some results, that's valuable information. And if you issue that, you're very likely to get media success. On average, for a good survey or study, 8 to 14 articles is generally the norm. I always say, as a little secret sauce, throw in one or two oddball questions. It's probably a third of the time it's those oddball questions that really go viral. In the case of the auto repair shop in Pennsylvania, I recommended the question, what's the strangest thing a customer left in their car while being repaired? And it was just an open field where you're allowed up to two sentences or so. And the stories we got were just amazing. And that was what the articles were about. I would say 80% of the articles were about these crazy stories, a boa constrictor left in a car. There was grandmother left in an urn in the back seat and they needed to retrieve it for memorial. It was just little wacky things like that, but they were fascinating and interesting. And you could understand why an audience would want to read that because it's like, it's strange and it's you know, interesting. And if you sort of approach it from the standpoint of how can I reverse engineer some really cool questions to really, you know, bring out some cool stories, you could really capture on that. So I think a survey or study works for almost anyone. And this auto repair shop in Pennsylvania is not an authority in auto repair, but yet they're the author of that study. And that study did very well.
What I think is interesting, as you're talking about the most interesting things people left in their car, I'm just imagining the articles and the clickbaity titles that are being written of, you know, find out the top 10 most craziest things auto repairs found in a car, and people are like, oh, I want to read that. And they click on it on Facebook or whatever.
Right. And, you know, I think in our case, they published there was 800 respondents, and I think a couple hundred of them put really cool stuff. I think we published the top wacky 100 or something like that. But the journalists, their stories would focus on 25 or 50. They picked and choose what they wanted to fit the space that they had. So if they had space for a really large column, they might list 50 or something like that. So it was really good. And it really was moldable to fit the space, because some people were just looking for a little filler. Some people were looking for a more in-depth article, and it was able to work in all of those.
Do you find your clients using press releases mainly for PR attention, or are there some that are focused on trying to get backlinks for their website for SEO value?
It's a little bit of both. Most of them are looking for the media pickup. But in the case of the auto repair shop in Pennsylvania, they were looking for backlinks. And an SEO guy told them, you need to get links from the auto industry if you want to rank. Now, they had been paying the Yellow Pages for a brochure site. And I don't know if the Yellow Pages changed their business model or what, but all I knew was their website went dark and they had to put up a new website and they weren't ranking at all. And so this SEO companies had recommended press releases. They reached out to me and I told them, I said, if you want auto industry trade publications to link to you, it's got to be very newsworthy. And the only way I see of it, if working for you, is to do a survey or study. So they took everything I said, put it in place, did the survey, threw in a couple of the oddball questions, and reached out to an independent trade association for other auto repair shops. And I think they got like 800 responses from it. It did really well, better than I thought it was. I thought maybe 200 or 300 responses would be like on the high end. And it really resonated and did extremely well for them. They got over 8 auto industry trade publications linking to them, a couple of dozen newspapers, including their local newspaper, which was a real big win. We weren't, you know, necessarily thinking that local media would pick it up. So they were really looking for just the links, because the auto industry trade publication readers are not their customers. But it worked out. In less than 3 months, they were ranking number one in their city. So the authority of these auto industry trade publications is so strong that with just less than probably 15 or 20 links, they immediately catapulted to number one position.
That's awesome. So just kind of switch gears here. What would you say has been the biggest challenge for you in business, and what did you do to overcome it?
I think for me, there's been just a lot of challenges as to trying to make things work. I know that I'm speaking to people who have maybe done online only press release services. So they've never really gone to a place that reaches journalists or goes over a newswire. But they've seen their website, their press release syndicated on a few sites. And like I said, you know, that's not really important. What you're really looking for is a unique article to be written about you. And it's really difficult to leverage the benefits. And so I feel like I've done a really good job of trying to find win-win solutions to all different things, like I did with the newswire. I do that constantly, trying to figure out how we can provide more value, make things better for customers. And it's just one of those things that I feel like I stumble around trying to get right and occasionally do. It's hard to please everybody at all times, but I do try to provide an extreme amount of value for what I provide and what I feel is a very fair price.
Awesome. What would you say has been the best moment in your business's history?
I'm going to have to say I had a client who had come from Russia and had gotten some kind of amnesty, speaking out publicly against the Russian mob. And an administration changed and they said, Russia isn't on a list of countries that is causing problems for its citizens. And they said, we're going to send you back. And he came to me and said, I have nowhere else to go. I have a flight on Thursday. I know my seat on the plane. And I've already been told by friends in Russia that they know who's going to pick me up at the airport to take me to be killed. And so we did a press release. We sent it out. His congressperson reached out to him within an hour of the release going public and said, I'm going to intervene. My whole office is going to intervene. We're going to try to stop this. And they did. And he came back to me and said, you saved my life. And that's not a joke. He's like, this is serious. I had a seat number on a plane to return back to Russia. And I had testified against all these people in Russia. I had written my own death sentence. And he said, you saved my life. And I was like, I've done a lot of cool stuff with press releases, but saving a person's life is like at the very top. So that was really great. And just shows you the power of getting the word out there. The Wall Street Journal wrote about it as it happened. It was a very high profile case. And it was just strange to see he had exhausted all these appeals. He had spent, he said, over $170,000 in legal fees through the entire process of appealing it and going back and forth. And he had lost his last appeal. And they said, you're on a flight on Thursday.
That is amazing. I don't think I could have predicted that would have been your story if I tried. So my follow-up question is, did you write a press release about saving a person's life with a press release?
I didn't. No. This person wanted the press release gone as soon as there was a favorable outcome. He said, I know I'm high profile. I've been in the media before testifying, and I just would rather just vanish from the public view. And so I honored that, but I wanted a great testimonial from him. And he's just like, I'd rather not have my name out there too much. And so I was like, understood.
Got it. So who do you consider a mentor? What would you say is the most important lesson they've taught you?
I would say I've done a lot with Perry Marshall over the years, who's really known for Google Ads and stuff like that. But, you know, he's all about the funnel and building that out and having a lot of paths to you for people to ascend. And he's really helped me quite a bit. When I first started working with him, I was very apprehensive about emailing my customers. And now I can point back to like 8 or 9 emails I send a year that probably add $400,000 or $500,000 in revenue to my business. And I wouldn't have felt confident about doing that and sticking my neck out there and bothering people. Because that's what I considered. I was like, isn't it considered spam emailing your customers about a promotion? And they're just like, no, that's just business. And
it's so called business. Yeah.
It is. And so I learned a lot about that. I've learned a lot about his 80-20 practice, where you try to hone the 80-20 of your business. And what you find is that the things that you might hate about your business probably account for such a small amount of your revenue. Just cut it out or find a way to minimize it, whether it's outsourcing that part of the business or figuring out something that works. And sometimes it means, you know, firing a client who just doesn't work out. You know, they might create, you know, 80% of your customer service issues might be just, you know, 20% of your customers. So looking through that lens has really helped me and helped me, you know, make my business better over the years. And one of the things that I believe in and do is split test as much as you can in your business. I take individual web pages on my website and just like, I wonder if I tweak this headline, would that affect conversions? And just try to figure out is this the best image I should have on the website? So I'll try a second image and just look at the traffic over time until it gets statistically relevant that there is a difference. And sometimes it's not in your favor. Sometimes it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's such great advice to think about the problems in our business. And I think as business owners, we think we need to have all this revenue, even though that revenue is maybe causing us, like you said, 80% of our headaches. It's not worth it, you know, but it's tough to let go of.
Sure. Absolutely.
Before we get to the last question, where can our listeners find out more about you and your business?
Okay. So ereleases.com is my website. All my social media is in lower right. That is my personal LinkedIn there. So if you reach out to me there, I eventually get back to you. It's probably where I'm most accessible. Customers or people who are just curious about the process can start a chat on the website or give us a call. You'll only talk to editors. We have no salespeople there. And I do have a free masterclass on press release strategies. I'm trying to get my customers to do more strategic press releases. And I feel like it's a great place for anybody who's considering a press release, because if you start, you'll be thinking more strategically about press releases that might work, like the survey study example I gave earlier. And you can find that at ereleases.com/plan, P-L-A-N. And again, it's completely free for now. I'm really just trying to get my customers through it. And I think I've got 400 customers who've gone through the whole hour video. And, you know, I have several thousand more that I keep sending out the emails and trying to get them to go watch it, because I know that if they did more strategic press releases, they'd have much more favorable results.
Well, that's great that you offer that tool for your community, and hopefully our community will take advantage of it as well. And we'll link all that information in the show notes. If you could hop into a time machine and go back to the day you launched your business, what piece of advice would you give your past self?
I would say, don't take anything for granted. Test as much as you can. I used to send crazy welcome packages to all my new customers, zany stuff, quirky things like that. It expressed my culture, my business culture, and we're a little different. And I had a couple of people say that they thought it was really unprofessional. And rather than get offended, I split tested it. So for 6 months, I sent half my customers that. The other half, I sent a free book that I wrote on press releases and a letter. And then we watched them over the next 2 years to see if there was a difference between them. And the people who got the book and the professional letter were double the revenue and lifetime value already compared to the other things. So rather than get offended, I was like, let's test it. And she, you know, the person who brought it to my attention, there were two people, but it was a woman who really almost made me angry to say it was unprofessional. And now I have to thank her, because it's really probably helped my business quite a bit by bringing that to my attention.
What a great reaction to that. Because I think all of us, when we have an idea and we think, oh, this will be great for our customers, they'll love it, you know, show our personality, and you know, someone's taken aback by it and maybe gives us some negative feedback, for you to process it that way and come out on the other side ahead. That's awesome. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end. And Mickey, we really appreciate all the value you brought to us today. And I hope our listeners take advantage of your free masterclass too.
Perfect.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business School podcast. If you like what you heard, please share it and leave a review. It would mean the world to us. If you are a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other take their businesses to the next level. To learn more about our guest today or to be a feature guest on the Small Business School, go to craigstaley.com/podcast for more info.